Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Live Line. I think this avalanche of calls and texts and messages and indeed letters we've got about physical punishment in schools was prompted by one particular remark last week by one of our contributors who contacted us about sexual abuse in schools. And that was Damien O'Farrell. A lot of people in Dublin know him. He's a very active independent councillor in Dublin City Council and a very well-respected activist and indeed campaigner on abuse in the Christian Brothers in particular over the years. And indeed he met Pope Francis when Pope Francis visited here about 5 years ago. But Damien used the phrase, he was objecting to somebody who had used the phrase earlier in the day, this is historical abuse. And he was making the point, this is not historical. This abuse lives with us every single day. And that prompted a number of calls on corporal punishment. Now, for anyone under 50 in Ireland, it's hard, you never, hopefully, ever experienced corporal punishment because it was eventually banned in 1982. Now, the ban was from the Department of Education. It said you're not allowed to beat a child with anything, your hands, a stick, a wooden spoon, a fishing rod. You're not allowed to beat a child full stop in the classroom. And otherwise you will face disciplinary procedures. You should have faced the guards actually in any time you bet up a child, but and that it would took another 14 years for it to become a criminal offence to beat a child in the classroom or indeed in the school. And that Damien's line was, this is not historical, this is real for us. So we've been contacted by a very significant number of people, and not all men, but mostly men so far, who were subject to physical abuse in school, and it still stays with them. And if you heard the calls on Thursday and Friday and how they connected with our listeners in their description, their modesty, their own humility, their own charity, but also the cruelty of what happened to them a number of decades ago and the effect it still has. It was it reverberated, obviously, a lot over the weekend and more people have contacted us. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 or 0818 715 815. Martin, good afternoon.
Hiya, Joe. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Flabbergasted with what's going on. It's amazing. But it's like it happened before. It's like Groundhog Day. It's happened before. And within 2 years, they'll still have the money. They'll still have all their property and life will go on.
You were 10.
I was about 10, yeah. Probably in Christian Brothers. And we'd had a half day on Wednesday, sports day, to go and play GAA, whatever. Yeah. And this day we were going to the sports ground. They'd made a new football pitch and they wanted us guys to go and pick up the loose stones. You know, when the grass is sown and the stones are still there. Yeah. They pick up all the loose and take them to the side of the pitch. So the Christian Mother was giving us the instructions of what to do and what not to do. And I was caught acting with a pal of mine. We were 10-year-old kids. Jesus. Yeah. And we were pretending it was like we were in a concentration camp and we'd been marched off somewhere. And he just roared my name and pulled me out of the line. And that's about all I remember. He laid in with the letter. And yeah. The letter wasn't good enough. So he laid in with the fists and the hobnail boots, the whole lot. And then this was in school yard. And then he dragged me into the classroom and continued on. And all the guys outside could hear the screaming and the whatever, the thumps your man was giving me. Whatever it is. But
now, just to go back, because, again, I'm very conscious of younger listeners, so to speak. The leather was especially, it was made for one purpose and one purpose only.
That was it was a beautifully designed piece of equipment. Yeah.
To beat children. It slipped into their soutane, into their inner pocket. Yeah. It was about a foot long.
about 18 inches long. And it was made of three pieces of leather sewn on top of each other, except when it got to the handle part, which weaved in a little bit.
Yeah.
It was only two pieces of leather. That was to give it a more flexible swish, so you could get a good swish on it, and you could hop off the child even better. So whoever designed that was obviously in the Gestapo or someplace, because they did a great job, because it worked.
So he takes out his leather and starts larruping you with the leather. You hit the ground, but then he uses... Boots are made for walking.
They were made for walking.
In his case, they were made for kicking.
Yeah, and he walked all over me, hopped all over me, and that was it. And then that was all over. I don't remember too much about it, but I remember just being thrown out and going back with my school bag on the back of my back, and standing at the bus stop and getting the bus home. And my father saw me and he said, "Oh my God." And I must have been black. I must have been a pitcher. I must have been black and blue. But he flung me into the car in a rage. Mm-hmm. And he drove at about 90 miles an hour all the way out to the school.
Wow.
And he kicked down the door of the the Christian Brothers' house. And the brother superior came out. "Oh, now calm down, calm down." And he wanted to draw blood with your man that got me, and he was cowering in behind the door of the school. But that was it. That was the last time I was in the Christian Brothers. I was then sent. My mother got me into a lovely school with the Vincentian priests in Rohini.
Yeah.
And
after that particular episode, when you were 10, you ended up in hospital.
Oh yeah, I did. Yeah, about a week later, I ended up in hospital. And the doctor came over to the house and he sent me in. I had an inflamed appendix. And he said, "Did you fall off a wall or something?" I remember him saying that. "Did you fall off a wall?" I said, no, I didn't. And I was afraid to say I got beaten by a Christian Brother, because you get more, the usual, you know. You must have deserved it. And that was it. So I had my appendix out at that time. But that was it. I never saw that school again, which was great. And then when I went to the new school with the priests, I couldn't believe it. It was the first time I saw a man 6'6". Like, I was only a tiny little young fella at the time. And looking at these guys with the dog collars on them, and I could see this guy smiling. I said, "Oh, my God, he smiles. He can smile." He's like, I couldn't believe it. And I loved that school. Loved it. I used to stay there every day after 4 o'clock. And I played the guitar as a kid. I was asked to give the guitar lessons to the other kids and whatnot. So it was great. I enjoyed it. Loved it. But that was my experience with the Christian Brothers.
Okay, and I remember I'm recalling a quote from Friday from one of our callers, which for young people today in schools, and indeed younger people generally, I hope, is the exact opposite. But he said there was more crying in our school from beating than there was laughing in a primary school. Stay with us, Martin. Jim, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. It's a great privilege to speak to you, my friend. Thank
and
you.
It's a privilege to hear you, Jim. You and your brother went through terrible corporal punishment.
Yes. I had one instance of my brother, which he told me, and the others then would be about myself. Okay. So will I tell you this?
Please do, yes.
Yeah. Well... Okay, yeah. We were very badly dressed. We were very poor. My father died before I was born, and my mother suffered terribly from her nerves.
Okay.
And we were very shabby going to school. Now, we were very clever, but very shabby.
Okay.
And the shabby children were beaten. Now, this brother, a huge man with a neck like a brain and bull, texted my brother one day and he said, "Now, lads, come up and I'll show you something. I show you the tinker's knot." And he had the blazer for the school on him and then a scarf inside that and nothing else. So he made him take off the blazer and he showed my brother had no clothes on underneath the above his waist. And he said, "That's what the tinker's knot is like." That was humiliation. Now, the thing is, that same brother, 3 or 4 years later, did the same to me. I just had the school blazer, but I had a V-neck pullover turned back to front so that it looked respectable. But he brought me up and he made me take off the blazer, turn around for class, and showed the V-necked pullover, right? Now, yeah, to humiliate me. Now, the thing is, later on that man, this huge big brother, he he was a maths teacher. Now, the thing is, I actually was a maths teacher afterwards myself for a few years. But I was good at maths. He could almost never catch me. But yeah. One day, he caught me out anyway, not knowing a theorem in geometry. And he got the cane, and he put me across his lap. He sat on the windowsill, put me across his lap, and gave me 28 lashes on the behind. And I could tell from lying over his lap that he was getting pleasure from it. Right? Now, you could actually count the marks on my bum, yeah. You know, afterwards. It was terrible. So that was him. I can give you some more examples, but I have other teachers.
Just to give people an insight, this is not historical, this is real, because you're thankfully still alive and many more years to come, please God.
Yeah.
Yes, tell the truth.
Yes, of course I'm telling the truth, yes.
Yes, I know you are.
And historically, yes, the beating that I just spoke about there, that would be about 1962. Huh. But then there was another teacher in the same school, he would teach Latin, and he would ask the same question over and over again. And you might, what I might note, and he slapped him every time. The slaps took up to 50, 60, and up to 70 slaps before he'd stop. Yeah. Then there was another teacher in the national school. I was 9 years old. I was injured. There was an explosion and a fire. A can, an old canister exploded. And
okay.
I knew I was injured, and I had a bandage in my head. And the teacher, another big man, I must have been talking out of turn. I did nothing more. We were scared, this fellow. And he belted me in the head. And he said, no, he said, you'll have more bandages in your head, he said to me. You know, that sort of thing. Yeah.
And then I want you to help again, younger listeners, I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
You mentioned this phrase that he used, the tinker's knot, is it?
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Just to explain to people, you were sent, you'd no choice. These were the clothes that were only available to you. And we're hearing a lot about what people were wearing. For example, on Friday, one of the calls talked about if you went to school and anyone under 50 does not remember these. They were called plastic sandals. If your mother, mother, didn't have the money to buy a pair of shoes, and remember we heard the story of the man witnessing the child, the boy coming into the class in his sister's shoes because he hadn't got shoes of his own, and the horror of what the Christian brother unleashed on him for wearing his sister's shoes. But there was a phenomenal thing called plastic shoes, and they were plastic, cheap plastic sandals with a little buckle on them and a little ridge.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, if you didn't have shoes, if you had Wellingtons, you would wear the Wellingtons to school and they would be regarded as... But anyway, the thinker's scarf was you had a jacket, but you had nothing to wear underneath it. So you would... Your mother would give him a scarf around his neck to give the impression that he had something underneath.
Yes, that is correct. Then I won't talk too much about my brother because I was crying a while ago. Yeah. No.
Has your brother passed, Jim?
Oh, not at all.
Oh, okay. Good.
He's living in America, the American dream.
Great.
Beautiful man. Yeah.
Beautiful man, okay.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, talking about footwear. I was 7 years old, right?
Yeah.
Actually, six. I was very young when I was going to school. I was in second class, and I was attacked by a dog going to school one morning.
Right.
An Alsatian dog. But I had the presence. I was a tiny little fella. He came along and he bit my back, my old coat.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, don't run because he'll run after you. I crossed the road, went into a person's house. Then he did it a second time. He went at me the second time. But when I went into the person's house and down their back, he stayed where he was. Now, I had Wellington boots on me because we had, you know, the closure and the best. So I had to cross a river. I won't say what river is now because you'll know the school.
Okay.
But, yeah. And, of course, my wellies filled up with water.
Yeah,
so I went to school anyway. And at the Angelus, this was 3 hours later, like, I absentmindedly, I was making a sort of a squelchy noise with my toes in the wellies. Mm-hmm. I didn't hardly even know. So the teacher came down, and instead of saying, oh, look, there's a little boy with wet Wellington boots and all morning, he beat me with a stick. You know, he just, yeah. and it splintered into my wrist, the wrist of my left hand, yeah. There were splinters on the stick. But that was him. Hmm. I could go on, if you like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm struck by, can I just answer one thing you said? What I think you said, James, at the start of the call.
Yes.
And you said, did you say under your breath as you were feeling for yourself and feeling for your brother, did I hear you say, I should cop myself on?
Yeah.
Why? Because you were getting upset?
Yeah, crying.
Why would you have to cop yourself on for real? Anyway, I just want people, because that to me, Jim, listening to you and all the other callers over the last, that little phrase that you said to yourself reminds us of what good people you are.
Oh.
That you were filling up to thinking about what happened to you, thinking about what happened to your brother, thinking of that whole issue you said about poor people going to school in rags. And as you began to connect with the emotion, you said to yourself, I have to cop myself on. And you kept telling that you don't have to cop yourself on.
Thank you very much.
It's a lot of other people in our society that have to cop themselves on, because I was reading at the weekend, and I read a few of them out on Friday, the debates in our parliament in 1956 when Owen Sheehy Skeffington, and I know he was a senator, and he was calling for the abolition of corporal punishment, and he put down a motion for the abolition of corporal punishment in the Houses of Oireachtas in 1956. You know how many votes he got in support, Jim? Zero. Zero.
Lord.
Zero.
Lord Almighty.
Zero.
My goodness.
Zero.
Joe, she's dead now. There was a cousin of mine, Sister Benvenuta, you may have heard of her.
Of course I do, yeah. Of course
yeah,
I do,
yeah. Well, she was a cousin of mine and a wonderful person.
Great,
She fought for the abolition of corporal punishment, big time, yeah.
And there was another man, Dick Clear, and he set up a great organisation. Again, I was born in 56, so my memory of the 60s politically is, well, I was quite young, but I remember these people, and Noel Brown, these people were vilified because they tried to abolish the savagery in schools. The savagery.
Yeah.
And Jim, do you talk to your brother about this, or is that too tough?
Well, Joe, I'm writing a book, and I have everything written now.
Brilliant.
But I'm kind of refining it. And he lives in America, and I was there one day in his beautiful.
Okay.
Place in Connecticut, acres of land and the American dream, you know.
Okay.
But I was talking about the book and that, and he said two things to me on two different occasions. He said, get over that city or you'll drive yourself mad, right?
Yeah.
And that was it. I taught him. He's a wonderful, smashing guy. But maybe a year or two later, then I was talking, I said, I have a fair bit of that book written, I said.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, do, he said, good man, finish that now, he said. And when he was finished, burn it, he said.
Yeah.
Which I won't, you know?
I know you won't.
I could tell you more stuff.
You're fine, Jim. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, this is actually... This is not a teacher. This would be my grandfather.
Okay.
Can I tell you a bit about that?
Yeah, please, yeah.
Okay. I was reared by the grandparents more than my mother. And when I was three, I was going to school at 3 years old. And we had a cow. My grandfather had a cow. But in the winter time, the cow would be dry, so you would be sparing the milk, and the milk might be sour.
Yeah.
And I wasn't able to eat the porridge with the sour milk, and I'd gag, I'd kind of vomit, right?
Yeah.
And he would say, eat the porridge, he said, and he'd belt me into the ear with his fist. Then I'd try and swallow it again. I'd vomit, you know. And then the trouble would start. I would start crying. Stop whinging, you little tyra. He'd say to me, stop, you little tyra. And he'd hit me again. And I would say, God, if you'd be very stupid, I'd stop crying if you'd stop hitting me. Yeah. I'd talk in my way. So that was, and then he would say, you're lucky, says he, that you're not over in Greenmount.
Okay. And I see other messages at the weekend. You're lucky if you didn't behave in school, you'll end up in Artane. Stay with us, Jim. James, good afternoon. Joe at RT.ie. 51551 is our text number. James.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
And more revelations. You say, I had my so-called education with the Christian Brothers in primary and secondary in Wexford Town.
Yes, that's right, yeah. I think the point that I've been trying to make, Joe, in a couple of emails there to you, is that the violence that we experienced was routine. It was standard, normal, you know. It was what going to school was about. So to the extent that I would be close to wetting myself going into school in the morning, out of fear. And I remember one particular year was particularly bad, which was fourth class when I would have been about 10. And I'm talking about 1964 now.
Okay.
And it was just a reign of terror. It was... I was like one of the smarter boys. Okay. And I was in the A class. So I'd be in the top three or five kids in the class in terms of academic ability. And I couldn't escape being beaten every day. Every day you had to get beaten. And I heard the man there talking about the leather and how it was made.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they had leathers that were made in the local cobblers. And these were the implements that were used. But I remember one particular beating... you know, where a stick was used, a long stick, on a young fella that had been mitching from school for understandable reasons. And the punishment for mitching was multiple beatings throughout the day with the stick. So I actually found it even more distressing watching the punishment meted out to the less capable students than what I experienced myself. And... my point, I think, is that this was systemic. State sponsored, effectively. We never thought of telling our parents what was going on because we were brainwashed to the extent that this is what you could expect from being in school. And we didn't know that it was outrageous or ridiculous or awful, you know, that.
And we see, and compared to Jim, I just want to compare that. I had conversations at the weekend. You, I'm sure, had conversations recently with grandparents or whatever who are watching their 5, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds go to school, run out to school in the morning with joy and expectation, and they love their teachers, and you see them going along in groups with the parents marching to school or whatever. And there is joy on their faces in the world we now live in, thank God. But that would, you're telling me the fear, and you're pointing out that the physical beatings were routine. They were normal. Extraordinary physical beatings, a lot of which we're hearing about, rightly so, were just bumps in a plane of violence anyway. And there was constant violence, and then every now and again, like the Jim and Martin's in particular, his beating on the ground, is kicking with hobnail boots by the Christian Brother, his appendix bursting and having been taken out the following week. They were the glitches that went up, but they rose. Those peaks rose from mountains of routine abuse. And every now and again, there was a peak. And I know one of them you talk about is, was it Martin on Thursday talking about sitting, watching other boys? He's crying, looking at them, because he felt he was a bit stronger, a bit more streetwise. And you watched this child who was beaten, what, every half hour?
That's it. And I mean, the way I see it now is that once we walked through the gate of that school, we lost all our human rights. The only thing they couldn't do was actually kill us. Everything else was possible, you know. And I think that needs to be understood as kind of the environment or the medium within which the more extreme acts that were talked about last week, the awful sexual and physical stuff, because there was this thing that you could treat kids any way you liked.
Yeah.
And so you then had these extreme perpetrators who did awful things. But in my view, all of the teachers in the school were perpetrators, but to a lesser extent. Most of them abused us physically, and there was one or two that maybe didn't. But they were tolerant. They were tolerating the others. Yeah. Everybody could see and hear what was going on, you know.
Yeah. And that boy, you alluded to it earlier on. Young children mitched because they were beaten, and then they were beaten because they mitched. They came back to the school. I think that was the half-hour boy. He came back to school after being caught mitching, and the brother lettered into him. And put him outside the door and said the same again in half an hour.
Yeah.
And it happened thirty minutes later.
That's right. And my bigger point, Joe, is how do we measure the extent to which we've all been damaged within our society? That to what extent is addiction, dysfunction, alcoholism, and so on? The general repression, the being forced never to speak up, the fear of speaking up, the fear of expressing ourselves, the fear of being creative. I see Ireland now, and I think it's a fantastic country. I mean, I know it's not perfect, far from perfect, but compared to what it was when I was a kid, it's doing great in the arts, in business, in sport. I suspect that a lot of that is the repression. That repression that we were brought up to expect have gone. It's not allowed anymore, you know. I think that's been a big factor in Ireland starting to mature as a young nation, you know.
And we are maturing.
Yeah.
But these issues are not historical because real people are still living with them. They're still living with them. Okay, James, Anady, Jimmy and Jim and Martin, go to Míle Mahogany in this first segment. Kind personal regards, and we'll be back after this break. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Before I go to more callers, a small sample now of what we've been receiving over the weekend.
I was at school in the 1970s. My fear of school left me with a bad stammer. If you were poor, that was your hard luck. In the end, everything I know was self-taught. I built my own house with no loan from a bank.
On my first day in school, I got a slap on the back of the legs for crying in sympathy with another child who was crying. I remembered being at the eye level of the nun's rosary beads hanging down on her habit. She carried a leather strap too. In junior infants, I was put sitting on the basket in the corner of the classroom. We were all terrorised.
I'm 71 now and was abused physically and sexually by a Christian brother. I said it one day to another young fella and it got back to the brother. He then beat me with the leg of a chair across my back. I got 9 strokes. I was 9 or 10 at the time.
I witnessed so much abuse. One of the girls in my class had epilepsy. And when she had a fit, she would stand up straight and the nun would beat her during the fit and tell us she was possessed by the devil and that she was beating the devil out of her. It has haunted me since, and that was primary school.
There was physical and verbal abuse of children in primary school all over Ireland under the auspices of the Catholic Church. I was boxed in the head and beaten on the head with the edge of a ruler or stick cut off the hedge. Most of my school friends, boys and girls, were beaten, pulled around by our hair and shouted at with vulgar language. All this at primary level. Crying was more common than laughing. Children should not have been beaten for not knowing their schoolwork, as fear was the main reason for struggling in subjects.
I'm 72 now, and I was quote-unquote taught by the nuns. Two of them were very handy with the ruler, six of the best, for no good reason. I was ridiculed in front of the class. I was told over and over that I was useless. I've come through it, and now I look back at those nuns as pathetic. But going through it was horrible.
These stories on Liveline are bringing back memories for me and my time in a Christian Brothers school. Every day I had the greatest fear of school. I wonder what beating I would receive that day. Because of my fear, I was run down health-wise and always sick. I was prone to boils on my neck. One particular quote-unquote Christian brother knew about my problem and beat me with his hand and strap across my already painful neck. Imagine the extra pain. I was always shy as a young boy, but enjoyed singing. I was extremely shy about singing in front of the class and cried with fear. I was beaten by a brother for not singing. I don't know how I survived all this after the terrible treatment I received.
I saw children being beaten horrifically by adult teachers. It was a state national school. I saw people caned so badly that they couldn't hold their pen after it. I got a few clatters myself, but didn't get it as bad as other people. I remember someone being kicked and having their hair pulled.
Joe at RTE.ie are indeed Liveline RTE Dublin, Dublin 4. Enda, good afternoon.
Joe, how are you keeping?
You're 53, so as I was saying earlier, corporal punishment was, we're told, abolished by the Department of Education in 1982 and criminalised in the mid-1990s. So you're 53.
I'm trying to figure it out there. I know it went out, corporal punishment, when I went into
second level.
Or maybe, I'm not sure. I was in third and fourth class when this teacher was you know, in working there, like, you know. So that's I know that I was coming to the end of the corporal punishment, but unfortunately, we've seen it, you know, in its full force, as I say, you know. But just the stories there, you know, it just came back there when I heard your radio, your guest talking there, you know. I was talking to your researcher, and you know, I just remember one evening. We school had finished at 3 o'clock, and it was the norm to stand up and say the prayers at 3 o'clock before you went home, you know. And I remember I stood up, obviously, to this man. He said, "Are you in a hurry?" I stood up too quick. I suppose we were mad to get out of the place too, you know. Mm. But I remember the beating he gave me that day. He used a ruler, the side of a ruler. Now, he was a big man, and he'd hit you across the full force across the flat of your hand or the tips of your fingers. But I remember that even I closed my hand too quick, and the ruler went down behind my nail and kind of broke the nail and burst at the top of my finger. But that was, Joe, it was the tip of the iceberg. I was seeing beatings that men in where I live, in the area I live, are damaged to this day for it. I also was talking to your researcher there, like, my hands, I suppose it's kind of a birth defect. My little fingers are kind of a bend. It's bent, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's kind of family hereditary thing or whatever. But if I hold my hand out flat, my little finger, the tip of it is up above all my other fingers, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I sure do, yeah.
So when he was hitting me with the ruler, that top of that finger often got bursted, or there'd be a big blood clot across it from the beatings. So I used to compensate by holding my middle finger up a little to stop the small finger being hit, if you kind of understand, or is it, I'm explaining it right. It used to be that middle finger got bigger and bigger over time. And anyway, I kind of didn't pass much notice. I kind of thought it was another birth defect or whatever, but
in my adult life, I went to a surgeon to see about maybe straightening the little fingers. And he looked at him. I said, I'm actually more interested in that other finger in your hand. He says, I'm after looking at x-rays. He said, that finger has been fractured on several occasions. And so look at it. I knew straight away that that was what it was, like, you know.
From the beatings.
From the beatings, yeah. Because it used to be bruised into... I wouldn't be able to hold a pen after.
And you say this individual also bet children who had speech impediments.
Oh, it used to be horrific, Joe. I'll never forget. There was some girls and there was some lads. They would have a bad stammer, like, you know what I mean, as kids might have.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And as they tried to say a word, he'd beat them to say the word, he'd keep saying to them. And so their stammer got worse, and he bet them more and bet them more. And, there's men in their 70s just today are bad stammers from it, like, they never got over it, you know.
Yeah.
Like, he used to beat us, say you had a cold. Yeah, a child would have a sniffle or a cough. If you sniffled, you couldn't sniffle. If you sniffled, you were beaten. If you coughed, you were beaten. You know, and I just hear one of your callers saying how happy I have two kids. Like, one is in, well, the bottom of secondary school now, but, you know, they love their primary school.
Yeah,
and it was just...
But you're only, I come back to that point, you're only 53, and look at what you endured, and look at the your children, not your grandchildren, or your great, your children, the in general, the love they have. One of the main reasons is that corporal punishment has been totally and completely, and people wouldn't tolerate it, and I hope wouldn't tolerate it from parents either to children. Stay with us then. Paul, good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Do you know to this day why she attacked you?
No, I don't. And my brother and I often talk about it. Well, he died there just over a year ago, but we used to talk about it even up to before he died. And he was always wondering why she had such a set on me in particular, because I was no better or no worse than anybody else in the classroom. I know I wasn't as bright as a lot of them, you know. The very bright kids didn't seem to get as much as people like me, you know.
And Paul, do you remember when she started, this teacher?
I do. Our very first day that she arrived in the school. I'll just tell you briefly the story. We were getting a new teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all excited, wondering who it was going to be,
a man
or a woman, or what she looked like, or he looked like.
Yeah.
And we heard her out in the hallway talking to another teacher in the school, and they were talking for a few minutes, and then she opened it. I was sitting in the... We had those big, long wooden seats with inkwells in them. This was in the mid-50s.
Yeah, of course.
With inkwells in them, and I was sitting on the very outside, in the seat on the back. And the classroom door opened, and I just looked around to see
who?
The new teacher.
Yeah, yeah.
And the next thing, she drew out and hit me straight across the face. That was the introduction I got, or she got. And that continues every... I don't remember a day that I wasn't beaten by her. I don't remember a day. I dreaded going into school. I hated it. All the times I wept myself... Cool. Yeah. I'm 74, no joke.
Yeah.
I can still see her. I've never got over it.
Yeah. And Paul, obviously, you've great comfort in your brother. Because he was there as well. He was as baffled as you were. This savagery being inflicted on you for no reason. I cannot think of any just reason to there's no just reason for that savagery. But you were completely baffled. We heard of earlier of children who mitched because they were being beaten, and they were beaten because they mitched. But you were baffled. And did you say it to any adult, Paul, or could you say it to any adult?
No. It just wasn't the done thing in them days, you know. The teachers and Gardaí and parish priests, they were God, you know. They didn't do anything wrong. Oh, yeah. God. There was another thing. Once a week we used to have... they were trying to teach us the tin whistle and play the tin whistle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anyone that knows me, you know, I'm not musically...
Yeah.
You know, but anyway, she had this long stick, and if you press the wrong button on the tin whistle,
mm-hmm.
down on the fingers, you get this long stick. She'd swing it from right behind her, right down on your fingers. And you can imagine how many times a day that has happened when you were learning to play the tin whistle. She was, oh, I don't know, I can't describe her.
Yeah. I was struck.
She was worse than Hitler.
And how did she move on, or say teaching in the school, or did she ever?
No. I moved on. She was still in that school. I moved on to secondary school, but I had 5 years with her, Joe. And this went on every single day.
Oh my God!
And then sometimes she'd make up an excuse that you misbehaved, and you would have to stay back. We normally get out at 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. You'd have to stay back for a half an hour, and you had to stand. She put you standing in the corner with a school book, and you had to stay standing in that corner for half an hour or more until she was finished what she was doing, and then she'd let you go home, and then you'd have to make up a reason why you were late home from school, you know.
Yeah. And did you ever meet her subsequently outside of school?
No, I didn't, Joe. But I did speak to one of the teachers that was teaching in that school just about 2-3 years ago. She was living in my local area at home, and I called to see her, because she was a lovely lady, and I called to see her. We had a great chat, but I did bring up the abuse thing with this teacher, and she said, yeah, I knew it was going on, but I didn't have anybody to go to. There was nobody to report to, nobody to talk to.
I did know it was going on.
She said, I felt for you. I could hear going on in my room.
I did know it was going on. I felt for
she
you.
Knew, yeah.
From
yeah,
the
she
room next door. Okay.
Actually, she shed it to you when she was telling me this. Shed it to you.
Stay with us, Paul. Joe at rt.ie, Liveline, RT Dublin 4 and The Post. Sarah, you did meet your abuser subsequently.
I did, Joe. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah. Yes, I did. It was a good few years after leaving school. I was working and everything, and unfortunately, I was attending a family funeral at the time. And lo and behold, the beautiful nun was there, and she went and she mentioned, "Hello, Sarah, and how are you?" and all of this, that, and the other.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in a crowded room, and it couldn't have been a better situation or environment, actually, because. I said, don't you ever, ever, ever even say my name again.
Okay.
And you have no right to do any of that. And I just told her straight out in a crowded room that she was, she physically abused me. And she took a major Redner, Joe, which, whatever. Now, this same woman would have been the pillar of society. And, you know, you'd nearly have the red carpet out for this lady. But she was so sadistic. I mean, she was incredible.
And Sarah, what age were you when this began?
There were two nuns, actually. The first started when I was 5 years of age in senior infants. And I had been quite sick as a child, so I missed a little bit of my junior infants. So this nun saw me as being a little bit of being put into the dunce corner, which, when you think of it, absolutely horrific. But and she used to, I don't know whether you can recall this, Joe, but the big roller books, she'd leave the classroom, and she'd leave us her classroom with maybe 4 or 8 spellings to learn. She'd be gone 20 minutes or half an hour, and she'd expect us all then to know these spellings, and of course I never did. And there was another chap beside me, the two of us were at the same little table, and religiously every single morning, Monday to Friday, we'd get beaten with the wooden spoon, 2 on each hand, every single day. So that's when that abuse started. Mm-hmm. Now that same woman is dead now, and but then I went into first and second class, and I had a beautiful nun who and I was back to normal academically within a few weeks.
Yeah.
But then the monster, the real monster approached then when I was in fifth and sixth class. And for just no apparent reason, she just frustrated, evil, sadistic being. I won't call her a human being, a being. But I suppose why I rang in, Joe, was I got great healing. I was listening to your other, the lady the other day on the phone, wanting to meet or try and find or source that nun that had abused some friend of hers or whatever it was. But I just wanted to highlight that I got great healing and solace from meeting her face to face and saying what I wanted to, I needed to say for years upon years, and to let her know.
How many years after the abuse did this happen, your confrontation with her?
Oh, dearie. No, this would have happened about, I'd say, 25 years, Joe.
Yeah, okay.
In or around.
Yeah,
now, I can't be exact, but in or around that time.
It comes back to the beginning of what I said today. One of the reasons why we have this avalanche is this is not historical, because it stays with people.
Yes, for so long.
I was reading, I think a lot of people are, Diarmaid Ferriter's new book called The Revelation of Ireland, 1995 to 2020. And I just warn people, if you are going to read it, don't have anything on the cooker, because it will burn, because you won't be able to put it down, because as usual, it's very readable. But this is, it's an overarching, but he makes this point, which really jumped out at me at the weekend in light of what we were saying about, and what was said a few minutes ago. We the teacher next door to Paul knew it was going on, and she felt for him, but she did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
This is what Diarmaid Ferriter alludes to. Renowned novelist John Banville, writing for the New York Times in 2009, maintained that everyone knew but no one said. Perfectly decent people can know a thing and at the same time not know it. We knew and did not know. That is our shame today. Eminent journalist and commentator Fintan O'Toole suggested that this amounted to a system of feigned ignorance, where you have one eye open and one eye closed, and we hadn't yet decided whether we wanted to look at the country with both eyes open. Now, I think we are looking at the country back on it now with both eyes open. Stay with us. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Tara and Owen will give us a small sample of what we've been receiving just since the programme began.
Absolutely horrendous listening to these extraordinarily brave men. I can't get over how articulate they all are, despite being deprived of an education. My husband is 60, and in sixth class, the teacher, who was a former Christian Brother, would fondle the girls in class, openly putting his hand down their tops and then rubbing himself through his pants. Hard to believe that this was in our lifetime and that none of them said anything to their parents, although they probably wouldn't have believed them if they had.
We had a headmaster with a cane and a leather, so whatever mood he's in, you get either or both. After giving you a few digs, then he would drag you out by the lugs of your ears and then left you to wait outside the office in terror, awaiting the beating. He would make you drop your trousers and he might rub you first, and then minimum six of the best, but mostly 12. It was nearly impossible to sit for the day, and this happened at least twice a week.
We had a lay teacher, and I'll never forget her cruelty to us. She used to walk past our house to pick the bamboo sticks to beat with us with. She'd catch your arm, go round, round and round, beating us with that awful stick that invariably had a split tip which hurt us even more. These beatings weren't for bad behaviour, because you daren't misbehave, but were for missing a question she might ask. Our fear was palpable. She had a small, shiny notebook, and on a Friday, she wrote the names of the girls who had to be slapped on Monday morning. So we had the entire weekend to be thinking of that Monday and those slaps.
At school, they beat the living daylights out of us. Six of the best they gave us for misbehaving, three lashes on each hand. One teacher was the worst. He was a molester too, and he would try to feel up the students at any opportunity. Luckily, I stood up to him when he tried it on with me, and he never tried again. Another teacher was another sadist and attempted to fondle us.
I went to a government-run primary school in the 80s and our headmaster had a leg of a chair that he used to keep in a drawer. My teacher would send me to that office for beatings. On the last day of corporal punishment, she got us all to write in our copies and she went around to every single one of us and gave us one last beating with two rulers on the knuckles as we wrote in terror.
That's Owen and Tara. Thank you both. Tara mentioned there, John, Monday morning, the teacher that kept the list for Monday morning. John, you dreaded Monday morning in school. Why?
Are you talking to me, John?
Yes, I am, John. Yeah, please.
I'm sitting here. I'm absolutely traumatised all over again listening to all this. We had the same teacher on a Friday evening, our last class. And we had him first thing Monday morning, a double class. He was an alcoholic. So, and this guy was an absolute brute. I didn't come from a wealthy background either. And I didn't have a tooth in my head. All my teeth were rotten when I was 12 years of age. And I used to be brought up in front of the class every time this teacher came into the class. Brought up, John, up to the front, show the class your teeth. And, you know, it was so humiliating, and the beatings. And, you know, Joe, I'm in my 60s now, and I'm walking down the street, and I'm looking at the new entrance into the secondary school here, and they're all in their new uniforms. They're all babies. They were only children. And it's hard to believe we were the same as that at that stage. And what they didn't do to us was unreal. And I'm going to say this now. I don't know whether it's relevant or not, but five of my classmates committed suicide. So, you know, and they committed suicide, not while they were at school. They committed suicide three or four years after they left school. They all jumped into the Shannon. You know, and these people were abused. I saw them. They were my classmates. But I'll tell you, the abuse was unreal. And the point I was trying to make was, it wasn't just the Christian Brothers. The lay teachers were just as bad. They were just as bad.
A whole culture. You mentioned you had bad teeth. I presume because your mother or parents couldn't afford toothpaste or a dentist or whatever.
There wasn't a toothbrush in our house growing up.
Another thing,
people ask, why didn't you go home and say that you got an unmerciful beating in school to your parents? Mm-hmm. You get another beating when you came home.
Yeah.
You see, there were...
John, he made you stand up in front of the class because you had your teeth were rotten, no fault of yours.
Yeah, well, it was from eating pixie bars.
I know, but I mean, you're...
But it was so traumatic. And, you know, and another thing, I was listening to your voice box there, the second last one you met, and there was something... I never had a job in my life, Joe. I failed my leaving cert. And because I didn't go to school. I used to go mitching. I didn't go, and I failed my leaving cert. And I never held a job. I had to make my own way in life. And I'm not illiterate or anything. Mm-hmm. I'm a very clever person. But, you know, you'd kind of have expected more from school.
Okay, and then you mentioned it earlier, the teacher that was the alcoholic, Monday morning, smell of him, whatever, and then... that he wanted the Christian Brothers, because we've heard about, obviously, the porpoise-made leather belts, the banisters, the wings off a child's cot, the fishing rod without the hooks on it, obviously, and the stays used fiberglass to beat children. And you say one of your Christian Brothers had a fan belt from a car.
He had, a rubber fan belt.
My God.
And you know that they're about maybe 3.5 feet long or whatever they are when they're cut.
My God.
And this guy, he used that as a whip. And I mean, there was no stopping. I mean, it wasn't six of the best. Okay. It was until he got tired.
Okay.
And I had a brother 1 year ahead of me in school, and he obviously was going through the same thing. Now we had bags, school books. that time, yeah. Joe, that you'd need a trolley now to bring the.
It's a heavy school bag.
We had
phenomenon,
the straps,
yeah.
You know, you remember you strapped them on your back, yeah. And they'd be, there could have been 4 stone weight. Now, I remember my brother at home, petrified about having to go into school the next day on a couple of occasions now. He would sit down on a chair and put his leg up on another chair, and he used to ask me to pick up the bag full of books and throw it at his leg so that I could break his leg.
Why?
You know, so that he wouldn't have to go to school the next day.
Please, hold that there, John. Let me go to Jimmy. Jimmy, good afternoon. You say, what was the phrase you came up with? It was, what'd you say, a gallery of... Tell us what happened to you, Jimmy.
Yeah, can you hear me there?
Loud and clear, yeah.
Okay. Well, just to honour the little child inside myself, this is why I have come forward.
Yeah.
I don't want anything from anybody.
Yeah.
I don't need an apology from the state or from schools or anything like that. I was beaten from the first day that I went into school for no other reason other than I was a child. And these people had the power to do that. For no other reason. When I went into school, I was told, you cannot speak English in here. Bigi galera kaintas guelga. I didn't know what that meant. Because in my world, everybody spoke English. Yeah. It was an all-Irish speaking school. And I was beaten and belittled and punished until the day I left that school. It was horrendous. Everything was taught as Guelga. If I attempted to speak English in the playground, somebody would tell the teacher and I would be beaten for speaking English.
Yeah.
It was horrendous.
And you say they'd use anything that came to their hands as weapons of torture.
And you remember the little duster that they used to wipe the blackboard with?
Of course, yeah.
On the opposite side of that, it was made of timber.
Yes.
And they would slap me on the head with it.
Yeah.
Now, I sat at the back of the school, at the back of the classroom. That's where all people like me, from my socioeconomic background, were placed. The children that came from the cream of society, they were allowed to sit up front. And there was no coal being burned, it was turf.
Yeah.
And we used to have to be told to get out and get the turf off Guelga.
Yeah.
There was no indoor toilet, it was a lavatory outside. And the words I remember, Amal Cadigan Dolga Dian Laras, Toramok Dala of Marta Dala, is what the teacher would say to us. I still remember it. I still remember, and to this day, Joe, when I hear the note, I have to turn it off. I learned to hate the Irish language. Now, later on, I went to school as a young adult, and I am so grateful to the tutor that was in that school.
Well done.
Because
well
he said
done.
To us, he said, you're adults, he said, okay. What did you learn when you went to school? And I said, I learned nothing. He said, all you did, he said, Jimmy, he said, you learned something. And I was very, very, very articulate and very animate in what I said to him. I learned to hate the Irish language. I learned to hate the Irish culture. I learned to hate the GAA. I learned to hate everything got to do with my culture because of the way I was treated. And you know what he said to me? He said, Jimmy, that just proves that you have intelligence.
Yeah.
You learned negatively.
Yeah.
It was learning, he said.
But
I'm feeling that emotion now.
Okay.
You know.
And as I say, you're speaking for recognition of that child and nothing
that
else.
That little child.
Very
yeah. He was innocent, Joe. Innocent.
Here, as they all were.
He was pure innocent.
As you all were,
yeah.
All those children.
Yeah, and everybody spoke here
who
today.
Who are in their 50s, 60s, and 70s
yeah,
now.
Carrying
and beyond.
That wound.
Yeah.
But there is a solution to it, Joe. And I found a solution. I found a solution through a support group.
Great.
And I will name the support group. They're called Adult Children of Alcoholics.
Okay.
And I met broken people like myself there that honour me and I honour them.
Great group.
It's an incredible group altogether.
Okay, Jimmy, thanks indeed. Thank you so much, Jimmy, and kind regards. It's now 12 minutes to 3. joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
The phrase I was looking for that Jimmy used earlier when I was reading through his emails, he called school a beating gallery, a beating gallery. And that other phrase reverberates from Friday. There was more crying in our primary school because of the beatings than there was laughing. And just hear that for young people today, where the opposite, I hope, I know, the opposite is the case. And the organisation I was thinking of that were campaigning in the 60s and beyond against, well, wasn't just Owen Sheehy Skeffington, who began in the 50s, was an organisation called Reform, and Dick Clear was the man. We'd find out more about that, who single-handedly started that and took on the state when it was neither popular nor profitable, as they say. Noreen, good afternoon, Noreen.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Yeah, good. The nuns, the presentation nuns.
Oh, yeah, in Camogie, yeah.
You say you wore glasses.
I did, yeah, and I broke them over the weekend, right?
Yeah.
Went into school on Monday.
Yeah.
And, of course, we were at the back of the class, just true for that man.
Yeah.
We were put at the back. The people with businesses, you know, their daughters were put in the front.
Yeah.
And I just said to the nun, I can't see the blackboard.
Okay.
My glasses are broken.
Yeah.
Come up here, you, she said. And she was a big woman now, Joe, a big woman.
Yeah.
And brought me near the blackboard, put her hand to the back of my head and banged off the board.
And what?
I'm telling you, I've seen stars that day.
And what age were you, Nori?
9.
My God. She smashed her head off the blackboard.
She did, yeah.
Face forward.
Yeah. So the wonder she didn't fracture my nose that day. Yeah. They were unbelievable.
And you saw
it. They got away with it.
Yeah.
They got away with it, you say. And I suppose they're still going on, you know, the abuse is still going on. I know there's good priests, there's good nuns there. But like,
society is much more vigilant, much less afraid.
Anyone knows that they speak up.
There's, and I'm thinking of the RTE, you're going to the RTE
time,
website for helplines and all the other supports that are out there, and you hear it in the ads regularly. Did you, when you went home that day at 9 years of age?
When I went home, when my father came in from work, he seen my father. He said, "What happened to your father?" Told him. He only went out the door and went up and came back, and I heard him saying to my mother, I'm after speaking to the Reverend Mother now, he said, and I brought that individual down as well. I insisted she'd come down.
Okay.
And I was afraid of my life, Joe, the following day to go into school.
Yeah, of course.
They were unbelievable, Joe, honest God. I'm sorry, no, because bringing it all back to me again.
And Noreen, I presume your father saying something to them made a difference.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Yeah, it did,
great,
because
great,
when
great.
I went in the following day, she brought me up to the front seat.
Yeah.
And I was terrified.
Yeah, of course you were.
And produced an apple, put an apple in front of me. I was afraid to eat it. I said, she'll kill me. She'll do something to me to say it. I know she will. Now, she had no time for working class people. It was all the people in Fermoy that had businesses.
Your little darling innocent child, Noreen, when she put the apple, having smashed your face the previous day, into the blackboard for not wearing your glasses, and
which
happened to anyone who wore glasses, we lost them every second day, you know that.
And
then you saw the apple and you said to yourself, she's going to poison me.
Yeah, I wouldn't
this
touch
is in your,
I was afraid.
This is in your little innocent head.
Yeah. She was a big woman, I can tell you.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, she was a big person.
Yeah.
But you see, some of them, Joe, didn't want to go into the nuns, or they didn't want to be priests.
Yeah.
Just their mothers and fathers forced them in. And then when they came in to us, they took their frustration out. Some of us.
Yeah.
You know? They wouldn't touch the people with businesses. They're daughters, no.
Yeah. No. Noreen, that
it was unbelievable. I don't know how you go home at night, Joe, with all the stories like that in your head. You're a great man.
It's a privilege to for people to talk And the way people like you do, Noreen. Did you ever meet the nun subsequently?
Oh, I did. I met her in town. Yeah. I'd say I was about in my 20s, Joe.
Okay.
I met her in the square in Fermoy, and she came over to me. And I said, oh, my God, what am I going to do? What am I going to say to this one?
Yeah.
I wouldn't go down to her level. No way. And she said, was I very hard on you, Noreen, going to school?
Yeah.
I said, sister, keep walking. Because I won't be accountable for what I'll do here in the square for my keep walking. She was looking for me to say, oh, sister, you were okay.
Yeah.
You were grand.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, no.
Give her absolution. I just walked away from her because
sister,
I was afraid
sister,
what I'd do.
Sister, keep walking.
Yeah, keep
what
walking.
What a phrase.
Yeah.
You're a good person, Noreen.
I don't know
at
about
nine,
that.
At nine and well beyond. You can hear it in your voice and your emotion and the way you talk about that. Look after yourself, Noreen.
And you
sleep tonight.
Yeah.
You sleep tonight. And you sleep the sleep of the innocent. And
thanks, Joe, for taking the call.
Thank you, Noreen.
Bye.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Jerry, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Thank you for taking my call.
And sorry for holding you for so long. You say it was junior and primary and second level school, as we call it.
Yeah, I was in national school, Joe. I went for a number of years all my life. We had the same teacher. It never changed. The teacher took a disliking to me. And basically, I used to get bet black and blue on the backs of my hands, especially because he would get a stick. And if he couldn't inflict pain and get you to cry, he would hit you in the centre of the palms of your hand until he got you to cry. And if you didn't do that, he would hit you across your knuckles and then hit you right underneath your hand until he made you cry. And if he didn't satisfy himself with that, he would then put you up to the blackboard, slap you against the blackboard, and then put you behind the blackboard and leave you there for the rest of the day. That was one of the experiences I had, not just me, but several students in the same class at the time. He also used dusters. In the morning times, especially, every single morning, mostly Monday, Tuesday and Wednesdays, he would come in with a hangover, have a half a noggin of whiskey and would be drinking that through the time. And we were told to fold our arms and put our heads down and go asleep until 10 or half past 10 in the mornings before he felt he was capable of teaching us. That is an absolute fact, Joe. That's what happened to me. And even to this day, I work in the bar trade.
Yeah.
And where I work in the bar trade, that man comes in every day and drinks in that pub. And I cannot tell my employer.
Okay.
I have not told my employer.
Another horrific glimpse. Jerry, thanks indeed. I'm out of time, unfortunately. Back tomorrow, as I say, Joe at RT.ie or indeed Liveline RTE Dublin 4. Jamie Doyle was on sound, broadcast coordinator Shane Galvin, producer Richard Stern, and Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Their new autumn range will leave you bursting with ideas. View in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.